Right. All right. Welcome everyone back to our three ideas in 30 minutes. As always, our learning should be an aliyah from the neshama of Esther T. Labask of Real Pinchas. And welcome to another Wednesday night edition. Please God, next week we'll be back at Thursday night. Okay. For those of you who are just at Mincha Maariv, you got a bonus idea, which we'll tie in here. But you got four ideas in like 45 minutes. But for everyone listening online, you're back to three ideas in 30 minutes. Okay, the first idea comes from Avram Avinu. As we just read in Mincha, the Pasuk tells us, Vayavur Avram be'eretz ad mikom Shechem, that Avram comes into Eretz Israel, and the first place he goes is to Shechem. Now, we just spoke about, now I guess I'll review for you and give the people listening online the bonus idea. We asked, why is it that Avram went to Shechem first? So Rashi says, it was to daven on behalf of the children of Yaakov, that when they were going to go to do battle, they should be successful. And we asked him, in Chamarav, doesn't Hashem hear our tefillos everywhere? Why did he have to go to Shechem? Couldn't he have davened everywhere? That was the Mincha Maariv. I don't need to repeat it, but that was the question that we asked. Here, if you see the Radak, points out something fascinating. This is a Radak in Sefer Yehoshua. I saw Rabbi Reisman quoted it, and I thought it was a very beautiful idea. When Yehoshua crosses into Eretz Yisrael, and he's Kores Bris, and he makes a Bris with Hashem, where does he make that covenant? None other than in Shechem. Shechem. He says in the third line there, Vasvem Yehoshua Shechem velo Shiloh. Don't you think it's strange that Yehoshua goes to Shechem and not Shiloh? He says, furthermore, we see that that's not the only thing that happens in Shechem. Vayavor Avram ba'aretz ad mekom Shechem. When Avram first comes into Eretz Yisrael, he goes to Shechem. Kisham nasa neis gadol Yaakov Avinu. There was a miracle of Yaakov in Parshas Vayishlach that happens in Shechem. So what's all this with Shechem? Shechem is the first place Avram goes. It's the first place that Yehoshua goes. It's the place where Yaakov has a miracle. What is all of this stuff that's happening in Shechem? Furthermore, if you think about it, and this is, we also quote in Mincha Maariv, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that Shechem is Muchan lePuranos. Bad things happen in Shechem. Dina happened in Shechem. Yosef gets sold into slavery in Shechem. So bad things happen in Shechem. Now, if I were to tell you that Yaakov, that Avram and Yehoshua were going to go to the first place, why would they go to a place where bad things were going to happen? Shouldn't they have gone to a place where good things happen? It would be like the equivalent of landing in Eretz Yisrael with your family. You're taking them there for the first trip, right? So where would you take your kids first? I don't know. You would take them to, you know, the ice cream store, maybe the Kotel. You would take them to somewhere exciting. You wouldn't go to Shechem. I mean, for many reasons, you wouldn't go to Shechem right now. But you wouldn't go to a place where bad things happened. You wouldn't take your kids the first place to the Gaza border as an introduction to Eretz Yisrael. First, you would take them to the happy places, and then you would take them to the not as happy places. So the Radak develops this idea. He says, "Ve'od ki tchilas hanachla asher haya leYaakov Eretz Yisrael b'Shechem." He says it's not just Avram, it's not just Yehoshua, it's Yaakov also. That was the tchilas nachla. Why does it happen? Rabbi Reisman developed the idea of the following, which I thought was a very beautiful idea. That Eretz Yisrael is niknim b'yisurim. We know that Eretz Yisrael is acquired through hardship. Eretz Yisrael, no one ever promised that things were going to be easy in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, by definition, is a land that is acquired through hard things. And so perhaps the reason why Avram, Yaakov, Yehoshua, their first stop in Shechem is to teach Klal Yisrael that the land of Israel would never come easy. It's never going to be an easy journey to enter into the land of Israel and to conquer it. It's always going to be Tchila LePuranos. It's always going to have difficulty attached to it. And to show them that, that was the first place they went. They didn't go to, you know, Marzipan first. They didn't go to the Kotel first. They didn't go to the ice cream store first. Where did they go first? They went to Shechem to teach us that Eretz Yisrael is Nikna B'Yisroel. Now, why? Why would you have to show me that lesson? First go to the ice cream. First go to Katzefet. And then take me to Shechem. Why do you have to go to Shechem first? You could tell me the same lesson. So for this, Rabbi Reisman quoted Rav Yonas and Eibschitz in the bottom of the page. Yonas and Eibschitz points out something so magnificent, that when Avram Avinu, when Vayhi Barav Baaretz, that when there's a famine in the land, Avram Avinu has to go down to Mitzrayim. Ask Rav Yonas and Eibschitz, how do you think that made Avram feel? What was Avram doing? Think about it. Avram was going around. And he was proselytizing two things. One, monotheism. What was the second thing he was telling everybody? He was telling everyone about Eretz Yisrael. that Hashem says, Lech lecha me'aretz chamalatcha. Hashem told me to come to this land, that this is going to be the land of our future. This is going to be a land of Eretz avad chalav udvash. This is going to be a land that's amazing. And all of a sudden, a few years later, what happens? There's a famine. And all of a sudden, Avraham Avinu has to abandon Eretz Yisrael. What do you think all the naysayers were saying to him, all the cynics and the scoffers? They were all making fun of him. They were all saying, wait a second. When we were davening to our gods, things were pretty good in Eretz Yisrael, in Canaan. All of a sudden, you convince us to daven to your God, and what happens? It all goes down the toilet. Now, all of a sudden, there's a famine. And so, all of a sudden, they start ridiculing and mocking Avraham Avinu. You think your God was helpful? We were doing just fine. We were doing just fine without your God. Now, all of a sudden, we start davening to your God, and there's a rav. All of a sudden, there's a famine. And so, he says in the middle there, the word is v'chein, towards the end of the line. He says, V'chein hayu ovdi kochavim, osim bimei Avram, shayu osim suros utlamasos lahorid shefa min kochei shamayim. They were davening to their gods. V'avram limdam shimnu mizeh. And Avram Avinu convinces them not to serve their idolatry. V'yachar kach kishabar rav. And then all of a sudden a famine happens. Hayazel lepischon pelahem. All of a sudden it gave an opening to the cynics and the scoffers. And they say, you want to know why the famine happened? Because we stopped davening to our idols. All the time we were davening to our idols, it was good. All of a sudden you convince us to daven to God, and the famine happens. It must be our idols are upset about that. And so what do? They start making fun of Avraham Avinu. But what does Avraham Avinu do? Does Avraham Avinu give in? Does Avraham Avinu stick to his guns? Does he say, despite the fact that it's going to be hard, despite the fact that it doesn't make sense, I still believe that this is the promised land, this is the chosen land, and that we're the chosen people, so to speak? He looks in the second to last line. He says, V'im kozos lo garmu lo ra'a. It doesn't deter Avram. V'amr shalom ibnei pachar azeh neis klal, ki batach libo ba'ashem, rach mimnei kavar harav. Despite the fact that everyone was making fun of him, despite the fact that everyone was poking holes and why it is that God must have given up on him and why God's not listening and you have to serve the idols, Avraham Avinu sticks to his guns. He says, you know what? I'm sticking with God. And that, says Rav Yonasan Eibshitz, was the greatness of Avraham Avinu at that moment. So what does that teach us? So Rav Reisman pointed out that what it really teaches us is that in Judaism, and specifically when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, we cannot have fair weather friends. Fair weather friends means that when Eretz Yisrael is doing well, so everyone wants to be on Team Eretz Yisrael. But the second there's hardship, everyone runs for the hills. That's not what Eretz Yisrael needs. Eretz Yisrael needs people that are going to stick with it through thick and thin. And perhaps that's why Avraham Avinu first goes to Shechem. Avraham Avinu first goes to Shechem to say that really, Eretz Yisrael is not about katzefet, and it's not about marzipan, and it's not about, you know, the breakfast at the hotels. Those are all nice. But if you're going to love Eretz Yisrael, you're going to love Eretz Yisrael when it's hard and when it's not hard. And so therefore, he goes to Shechem. He first develops his love for Eretz Yisrael in a place that's tchila lepuranos, where bad things are going to happen, to show that even then, even in October 7th, and even when bad things happen, even then you have to stick with Eretz Yisrael, and even when you have to love Eretz Yisrael. We see this in our day and age as well. There are some people that support Eretz Yisrael. There are some people that give a lot of money to Eretz Yisrael. But they're what we call fair weather friends. When it's politically convenient for them, when it's good for their base, when it's good for their voting bloc, so then they're going to vote for Eretz Yisrael. But the second that tide changes, and the second that whether it's pundits or politicians or podcasters start giving them reason why not to love Eretz Yisrael, so they run for the hills, they abandon us. We need people. We need friends that are going to love us for the right reason. We need people that are going to love us through thick and thin. Whether there's a war, whether there's not a war, whether we have to do what we're doing in Gaza or we're not going to have to do with Gaza. That is ultimately what Eretz Yisrael is relying upon. So says Rabbi Reisman, based on these two ideas, why does Avram go to Shechem first? To show us that even when things are hard, we have to love Eretz Yisrael. Avram Avinu, the greatness was not that he just went to Israel, but that when everyone else made fun of him, he stuck with it. When everyone else made him think that maybe it was because he believed in God and, you know, disapproved of the idols, maybe that was why there was a famine. Avram said, no, God made me a promise. The promise was that I was going to be chosen and that the land of Israel is going to be chosen. And he stuck with it even when it was hard. That is what we need nowadays. We don't just need fair weather friends. We need friends that are going to stick with us through thick and thin. That is idea number one. Okay, idea number two comes from my former principal, Rabbi David Shapiro. Rabbi David Shapiro was at Maimonides School, I believe, from 1970 to 2000. If I'm not mistaken with those dates, I'm sure someone will correct me. But he was there for many years. He was my principal my entire childhood. I was in Maimonides for 14 years. He was my principal the entire time. Now, Rabbi Shapiro davened in Brighton, Massachusetts, in a shul called the Tolner Beis Medrash. The Tolner Beis Medrash was because his Rebbe, who was Rabbi Soloveitchik's son-in-law, was the Tolner Rebbe. The Tolner Rebbe was Rabbi Tursky's father, Rabbi Tursky from YU. Rabbi Meir Tursky's father was the Tolner Rebbe. He was a big Talmid Chacham. He was a big scholar, a professor at Harvard, really an extraordinary person. He was Rabbi Soloveitchik's son-in-law. So he had a small base medrash. He had a small shul in Brighton, Massachusetts. And Rabbi Shapiro would daven there. My brother, when high school, my brother used to walk. We lived 3.5 miles away from the shul. My brother would get up early in the morning. I remember they davened at 8:15. My brother would leave our house by, I think it was like 7 o'clock in the morning, walk the 3 miles, daven in that Beis Medrash, walk back, get back in time to eat lunch with us, and then walk back for Mincha, and then Rabbi Shapiro, more often than not, would give him a ride back after Shabbos. So if you ever want to know, my brother, I love him, but he was crazy in high school, and now he gets up for Nate, so he's crazy now also. But that's a little bit about the Tolner Beis Medrash. So Rabbi Shapiro's quoting here something he heard from the Tolner Rebbe, Rabbi Yitzchak Tursky again, who was Rabbi Soloveitchik's son-in-law. He was married to Dr. Atara Tursky, who was the Rabbi Soloveitchik's daughter. And this is from Rabbi Meir Soloveitchik, the Rashiv at YU, his father. So he writes the following. Many years at a Sudash Lishit, Rabbi Tursky shared the following comment on the Pasuk in the Parsha. The Pasuk says that after Avram Avinu hears that Lot is captive, Vayarek eschanichab. So the word is Vayarek. So what does Vayarek mean? So the Gemara Nedarim cites Rav's approach that Vayarek means Shehorikan Batorah, that he emptied them from Torah. And Shmuel says Shehorikan Bazav, that he emptied them of gold. Now he writes here, classic medieval commentators offer two explanations of Rav's interpretation. What does it mean that he emptied them of Torah? One is that he taught Torah. If you look at Rashi there, we'll look in the Hebrews in a second. One is he taught Torah. In other words, the imagery of a astute teacher, he's emptying his teachings into his students. Number two is he emptied them of Torah because he stopped teaching them and drafted them into the army. And so you see that, you have the Hebrew here, you have those options. For example, Rashi says, Shorikam betorah, shelimdim Torah, ka'adam shemerik mikli zeh leto kli zeh. That he taught them Torah. It's as if he was pouring from one vessel to another. So a teacher pours from himself into his students. But then, look at the Rush. The Rush says, Zirzon bischus ha-Torah b'shvila nitzchu b'milchama. That he motivated them that in the schus of the Torah, they should be meritorious in the war. But look at the Ran. The Ran says, Shorikam b'Torah. What does it mean that he emptied them of Torah? Zirzan b'Torah, that one is that he motivated them in Torah. And number two is that he emptied them of Torah. Milashon ve'abor reik sh'asabem angurie, because he made them into an army. So it's contradictory. In other words, did he teach them Torah or did he prevent them from teaching Torah? One says he was like a teacher who gave Torah to his students. And the other says he emptied them of Torah because he drafted them out of the Beis Medrash into the army. So which one is it? Rabbi Tursky's comment was that the second explanation is seemingly the opposite of the first. Right? The second implies that he took them out of the Beis Medrash. The first implies that he put them into the Beis Medrash. In truth, however, these two interpretations are not opposed to one another. They are complementary, necessary parts of life. The second interpretation represents the implementation of the first. What does that mean? Study of all disciplines, and particularly Torah, must be translated into actions, must be implemented in one's behavior within society. And so therefore, much of the Torah tells us not to just stand on the sidelines, but to get up and to be motivated and to get into action. And when I skipped a few lines, and when the occasion calls for it, we close the Sfarim and we spring into action. This principle that emerges from Avraham Avinu's initiative in Parshas Lech Lecha this week was actualized 3 weeks ago on Shmini Atzeres. Obviously, he's writing this right after October 7th. Jews throughout Medina Israel closed their sidurim and chumashim, hastily ran home to take their weapons, bid well farewell to their families, and reported for emergency military duty. In other words, it's such a beautiful vort what he's saying. Listen to how amazing it is what he's saying. The Ran quotes that there are two interpretations. What does it mean that he emptied them of Torah? Either it means that he taught them Torah, or it means that he emptied them of Torah because he drafted them into the army and had to take them out of the base medrash. Says Rabbi Tursky, they are not contradictory of one another. It's a synthesis. They are complementing each other. That one thing is to learn Torah, but there's times when you have to, he says, close the Sfarim and spring into action on behalf of Klal Yisrael. And so Rabbi Shapiro connects that with what happened on October 7th. The imagery of people learning in base medrash, they were in shul, and all of a sudden, Klal Yisrael history called upon them. So what did they have to do? They had to close their Sfarim, and they had to spring into action. And so says Rabbi Tursky, they are not contradictory of one another, they're complementary of one another. Sometimes we learn, sometimes we sit in the Beis Medrash, but sometimes Jewish history requires us to leave the Beis Medrash and to go out and to protect Am Yisrael and to protect Eretz Yisrael. And so therefore, the two interpretations of what does it mean that they emptied them in Torah, they're not contradictory of each other, but they are complementary to each other. One says that he emptied them of Torah, that he taught them Torah. The other says that he emptied them of Torah, that he brought them out of the Beis Medrash. They are not contradictions. There's a time for each. Sometimes you have to be learning, and sometimes, as Rabbi Shapiro pointed out, sometimes we close the Sfarim and we spring into action. And that's what he says is exactly what happened on October 7th on Shmini Atzeres. He writes, Avram and his students succeeded in their campaign, may HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in response to the fervent tefillos, etc., make them successful as well. And I think that continues to this day. And I think that's a really such a magnificent, beautiful understanding of what does Vayarek mean? Again, Vayarek, what does it mean? So Rav says, Hirikin b'Torah, that he emptied them of Torah. And we didn't know what that means. Rashi says it means that he taught them Torah. The Ran first says that he taught them Torah and then he emptied them of Torah. Says Rabbi Tursky, it's both, that there's a time for each one of them. Such a magnificent, beautiful, beautiful understanding of the Parsha. So again, idea number one came from Rabbi Reisman, of Eretz Yisrael's nickname B'Yisurin, that the land of Israel is hard. And we have to know it's hard. And we have to know that despite it's hard, we're going to love Eretz Yisrael. And we need friends who are going to love it through thick and thin, not friends who are fair weather friends. Idea number two came from Rabbi David Shapiro, my former principal, quoting Rabbi Yitzchak Tursky, the Tona Rebbe of Boston, who has this really stunningly magnificent idea into what it means Vayarek. Either it means he emptied them of Torah, or it means that he took them out of the base medrash. But he points out it's not a contradiction. Rather, they are complementing each other. Okay, the third idea comes from a sefer, Galilei Zav, who's written by, I don't know if I'm related to him, David Mushkovitz. I'm not sure who that is. I'm sure Rabbi Kasorla will tell me at some point who that is. But I thought this one was so beautiful as well. And I think this was my favorite idea of the morning, of the night. Here we go. The Pasuk says at the end of the Parsha, Vayira Hashem El Avram. And then it says, Hisalech lefanai ve'ayet tamim. Okay? He tells Avram that you have to walk before me and that you have to be pure. Rashi says, so Chazal say, what does that mean? It means, lefanai b'mitzvos mila, that Hashem gave Avram the mitzvah mila. And Rashi there says that right afterwards, or the pasuk there, sorry, says right afterwards, Vayipol Avram al panav, that Avram falls on his face. And Rashi says, why does Avram fall on his face? Mimora shchina. What is mora shchina?
Fear.
That he encounters Hashem and he falls down in fear, similar to what we did on Yom Kippur when we do Aleinu and we all bow down. Ask the Sefer Galilei Zav, such an obvious question. Was this the first time Avram Avinu was encountering Hashem? No, Avram Avinu had met Hashem already a few times by this point in the Torah. So why didn't he fall on his face the first time? Why don't we open up in this week's Parsha, Vayira Elo Hashem, Lech Lecha Me'artzcha Mimol Ardzcha, and then all of a sudden, Vayipol Avram Apanav. Hashem appears to Avram, says Lech Lecha, and Avram falls on his face. We don't have that. Why all of a sudden at the end of the Parsha, when we come to Yisalech Lefanai Ve'ari Tamim, the Parsha Bris Milah, does Avram fall on his face? And Rashi says it's because of the Moreh Shechina, because he's a fear of Hashem. Now, I would have said that the reason why Avram fell on his face is, I don't know if you would describe to Bris Milat Avram, he also wouldn't have been so thrilled about it, right? Right, exactly, also wouldn't have been so thrilled about it. But that's not what Rashi says. Rashi says it's not because he's afraid of Bris Milah, that he has this awe and reverence for Hashem. But he'd already spoken to Hashem. It's like, you know, you get called into the principal's office. All right, so the first time you get called into the principal's office, you're shaking, you're afraid. By the, you know, 15th time that year you're called into the principal's office, you're not as afraid. So Avram Avinu should have fallen on his face at the beginning of the Parsha. Why is he waiting to the end of the Parsha to fall on his face? Says the Sefer Galilei Zav something which I found really just stunningly beautiful. He says, what was Avram Avinu's entire mission? What was his entire purpose? So we say it was to spread ethical monotheism. It was to spread monotheism. But he points out that it was really actually more than that. You see, Avram Avinu wanted everybody to follow Hashem and to almost be equal in following Hashem. His goal was that the entire world would be doing the same thing. Avram Avinu was a lover. He loved people, and he wanted everyone to love him, and he wanted everyone to get along. He writes here in the fourth line, he says, "Haisa avodaso shel Avram lishtadel shi'a kol mina noshi echad." He wanted everyone to get along. He was the Josh Brody of that day and age. Right? He wanted unity. He wanted everyone to love everyone. Am echad v'das echad. Everyone to just get along and to be the same. Sheze sefer Torah's ha-socialism. Shelo yeshum gimmick. Right, yeshum gimmick. Shebishvilo yizgara ish be'achiv la'ora kitata mariva delahafri be'enachim. He didn't want anyone to disagree. He didn't want there to be any divisiveness. V'kacha yedai social Avram Avinu. That note, that's what Avram Avinu's inclination was. Was that everyone should get along. So what happens? Because he wanted everyone to get along, he wanted everyone to love Hashem so that everyone would get along in their love of Hashem. He didn't want there to be any divisiveness. He didn't want there to be any jealousy. He wanted everyone to get along. What was the problem? All of a sudden, Hashem comes to Avram and says, I want you to get a bris milah. And Avram Avinu panics. Why does Avram Avinu panic?
Because
he's going to be different. Avram Avinu realizes all of a sudden that he's not going to be like everybody else. And that somehow he's going to have to earn people's respect, even if he's going to be different from them. And that's a really hard and scary thing to do. It's very easy to want to try to blend in. It's very easy to not want to be different and to want everyone to get along. It's much harder when you sit at that business dinner and all of the colleagues that always think they're the same as you, and all of a sudden you have to say, you know what, I'm really not like you. And my values are a little bit different than you. And the things you eat, I can't eat. And oh, I can't drink that bottle of wine because rabbis 2,000 years ago were afraid that I would get married to you. And I have to figure out how to explain that. Not, like, it's awkward and it's really hard. And so all of a sudden Avram lived under this misguided idea that he was going to convince everyone to love him and be just like him. And all of a sudden he realized, no, I'm going to be different than everybody else. I'm going to be sitting at business dinners with a plate that's going to be wrapped in 45 pounds of saran wrap. And I'm going to go out to a bar with my friends and my colleagues after a successful quarter, and they're all going to be drinking wine. And I'm going to have to tell them that I can't drink that bottle of wine or I can't have that drink because it has non-kosher elements in it, right? That's awkward. That's really hard to do. Or I'm going to go to an airport and I'm going to, you know, daven in the corner with my towels and tefillah, right? We all know whatever examples in your professional life, we've all had those moments when it hits the road, when the rubber hits the road and you have to explain to someone, I know you think we're the same, but we're not. And for everyone, that's going to be at their level. He says, that's why Sinai is called, right? The Gemara says, V'chein amru lamanik roshmo Sinai. Why was it called Har Sinai? She'yarda sinna la'akum alav. Because the non-Jews hated us. Up until that point, we were the same. All of a sudden, we get the Torah and we realize we're different. And they hate us because we're different. Because it's awkward. And because it's uncomfortable when you go to those business meetings. And it's uncomfortable when you have different set of values. And so therefore, Al Kain, he says, two lines below that. Kisha Amar Hashem La Avram, Sheyimol Es Asmo, Nafal Al Panav. Now we understand why Avram falls on his face. Mipachad Hasakana Hamirachefet Allah Ve'alzaro. He's now afraid. He's afraid for himself, and he's afraid for us. Because we're going to have to explain to the world that we are not the same as them. We are going to have to explain to the world that we have a different set of values as they do. We have to explain to the world that doesn't mean we judge them. It just means we're different than them. And that's going to make them hate us. And they've hated us for that throughout generations. That was why Sinai was called Sinna. Because the second we got the Torah, the second we got Bris Mila, they hated us because we were different. Because we couldn't go to the same restaurants that they went to. And we couldn't go to the same bars that they went to. And we couldn't go out on Friday nights with them. And we have a different set of values. And they hate us for it. It makes us uncomfortable. It threatens them because it makes us realize we're not the same. And therefore, they think we think we're holier than they, right? So Avram Avinu is afraid. And so he falls on his face. Ki something. Haya ba'atzas achas. Ki yev. What?
Ad ata.
Ki ad ata haya ba'at. Thank you. Eitz achas im b'nei doro. Up until this point, we're kumbaya. Yeah. We all get along. We all love each other. La'ached es kol yoshvei tevel liyos la'am echad ve'amun achas v'yata. But now that Hashem gives him the commandment of Bris Mila, v'peta pitom, in an instant, yishana es daito. All of a sudden, he realizes that they are going to view him differently. V'yaseh maise pela kazeh lachtom atzmo b'chosem afrid bolem kazeh. It's going to be such an external manifestation of a separation. And that's why he was afraid. That's why he was afraid. I thought this was just such a beautiful understanding. First of all, what does it mean that Avram fell on his face? Remember our original question. Our original question was, Hashem comes, he gives him the commandment to Bris Mila. Avram falls on his face. Not because he was afraid of Bris Mila, but because he had a reverence for Hashem. We said, wait a second, Avram Avinu encountered Hashem many times. Why didn't he fall on his face at the beginning of the Parsha? Why does he wait until the end? And so he develops this entire narrative. That up until that point, Avram Avinu thought that he could get along with everyone, that he would be the same as everybody, that there would be unity, that there would be a sense of uniformity. All of a sudden, Hashem gives him Bris Mila, and Avram Avinu panics. He falls on his face in fear because he realizes, I'm going to have to go to that business dinner, and I'm going to have to explain that I can't eat what you eat. And I'm going to have to somehow explain what, you know, Bishul Akum is, and what mevushal wine and non-mevushal wine is, and why if it's cooked, they weren't afraid that it was going to be served as idolatry. You know, these things are like, they're nuts, we're crazy. But this is what we do. And Chazal purposefully created separations for us, but it's awkward sometimes, and it's uncomfortable sometimes, and sometimes they hate us because of it. And so that's why Avram Avinu was afraid, but ultimately, if you think about it, that's ultimately what's kept us intact for all these years, mm-hmm. right? Our separateness has what's caused them to hate us, but it's also what's allowed us to preserve the integrity, right? That's what's prevented us from assimilating. That's what we say at the Seder night, Vayisham Lagoy, Vayu Mitsuyanim Sham, that we kept our names and our language. We remain different in Mitzrayim, and that's what's allowed us to persevere throughout thousands of years of exile, is specifically Avram's fear that what Avram viewed as a weakness actually ended up being our greatest strength. It ended up being our greatest source of stability and sustainability as a people. So we saw three ideas in 30 minutes. The first idea was from Rabbi Reisman of why did everyone go to Shechem first? And we said Shechem is not a happy place. They should have gone to Katzefet first. They should have gone to, you know, what's it, what are the, Be Fresh, you know, one of those places and get a Aroma Cafe, whatever it is. They should have gone there first. I can't. I'll tell the story after the recording's off. I have a funny story for you about that, right? So they should have gone there first. Why do you go to Shechem first to teach? They have to love Eretz Yisrael through thick and thin, both for us and for our friends. We do not believe in fair weather friends. Idea number two came from my former principal, Rabbi Shapiro, quoting Rabbi Yitzchak Twersky of Shehorikan Batorah. I'm sorry, Shevayarek. What does it mean Vayarek? So he said there were two approaches. Either he emptied them of Torah, he emptied himself of Torah, as he taught them Torah. Or he emptied them of Torah because he took them out of the base medrash. We said it's not a contradiction, rather they are complementing each other. There's a time for each. Sometimes you have to be in the base medrash. Sometimes you have to be called to action. And the last idea, this beautiful sefer, Glilei Zav, what was it that Avram was afraid of? Avram was afraid that he would be different. It was the first time that Avram had to explain being different to the people around him, and yet he had to earn their respect despite that difference. And I think that's very much relatable to all of us, whether you're a rabbi, quite honestly, or whether you're in the secular professional world. All of us have encountered situations like this, but ultimately I believe that Hashem is smarter than Avram, because Hashem understood that it's exactly that level of separation that Avram Avinu so feared ended up being what sustained us throughout history. And with that, I wish everyone a good Shabbos.